I trade great services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast number 204. I'm Adam, and with me this week are Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
Rutan, that's the empty rhetoric of a defeated dictator, and I don't like your face either.
And Mary Lang.
You said I would like Brighton. Well, I do not.
Well, it seems that we're dropping like flies, or we're getting people that don't want to be on the show anymore.
Really?
So soon it's going to be just me. I'm soon this is going to turn into Tin Dog Podcast Mark II.
You're going to have to bring up another daughter in this.
No, she's not. I actually already thought of an idea for the other daughter, actually, the other day, when thinking about, shall I bring her into the podcast, or shall I just launch a new podcast? And because I come up with a really good title for the launched new podcast, if indeed it hasn't already been used. So I'm just about to go and check to see if the title I'm going to copyright has been used or not. So I'm just
is it Doctor Who related, or is it a different tangent?
It's Doctor Who related. Of course it's Doctor Who related, because it would be Isabella watching every episode of Doctor Who from the beginning.
So how about my daughter in space?
Oh dear, I think somebody's already come up with the idea.
Will she do it, though?
Eventually, she'll do it. Well, Alicia did, under duress. No, apparently there isn't. Oh, there is. What's this here? Oh, no. Oh, she is. Oh, forget that plan, then. I won't be able to call it that. Oh, yes, I will. Well, the old Doctor Who podcast feed used to call occasional versions of their podcast Behind the Sofa, and I thought that's a really good name for a podcast in relation to Doctor Who.
So I thought. I think there's also a book with that name.
But I thought it would be ideal, because it'll be Isabella as a child watching Doctor Who classic series for the first time, and that is when people used to watch it, apparently, allegedly, behind the sofa. But nevertheless,
always call it Amy Fell Down.
Yes, that, I like that.
Amy Fell Down to the Ground.
Okay, wasn't it? Right, then. I suppose I'm going to get pestered by dogs now. This week, I'm going to start learning how to use my mouth and my teeth and my tongue. This week we're going to be talking about Horror of Fang Rock.
Yay!
So therefore, it begins with diddle-a-dooms and all that sort of stuff. and basically, this begins
with a bad Monty Python character.
It begins with actually written by Terence Dix. Now, I always thought at the time there was loads of Doctor Who stories written by Terence Dix, but of course his name always used to appear on the titles as script editor, but he hasn't really written that much TV Doctor Who.
Well, maybe not with his name on it.
True, but yeah, I suppose that's true. Anyway,
wasn't he Robin Bland once?
Maybe he was. Anyway, a pink thing, at least I think it was pink, crashes
pink
into the water. Observed by the lighthouse crew on top of this this lighthouse that, as we were talking before going on air, reminds me of Bell Rock Lighthouse. But Kirby then went on to say that the inner layout was actually based on what?
Needles Lighthouse, which is you could drive to in about, 30 minutes?
Hardly. It's a rock in the middle of the sea, so it would be quite difficult driving to it, but I can certainly,
you could get to where you could visit it very
if you wanted
quickly.
Me to actually go and have a look at, view it from a fairly good distance, it would take me probably about 40 minutes to drive there.
That's nothing.
Is it not? Okay, if you say
next
so.
Week I'm going to have to drive about an hour and a half to visit a podcast. I'm going to be joining the celebration of another podcast. The Earth Station 1 here in Atlanta.
Yes.
And they're going to have a live podcast over at a comic book store. Uh-oh. Why have I got a phone call?
Matthew.
Might it be Matthew?
No, not this number. Hang on.
Oh.
Meanwhile, I'll just shut the... Which Hello? Dog's gone out there? Star, where are you? Star. Star in there. Star. Get in here. Come on.
I have no idea who that was.
Right. Hang on.
Anyway.
You sure it wasn't only somebody blowing down one of those tube things and it going, ahoy there!
if you heard the ring was row, blow, bow, row.
No, I didn't hear the ring. I heard a vibration.
No, yeah, I heard a vibration.
I do have a few.
They're calling again. Hang on.
Oh, good lord.
Oh, that's the call. Okay.
Hello? Who is this?
We'd like to sell you some insurance.
Yeah, really.
Do you need a penis extension? I have a bank account in Nigeria.
Yes.
We want to give you $50 million. Please give your bank details.
Okay, I'm back.
Oh, sorry.
Who was it?
Front and Sides 2.
Yes! It's the wrong number. It's the wrong number twice. Anyway, have we mentioned Bruce yet?
No, because we haven't got to that bit. We're talking about lighthouses. And I was saying, or going to say, that I'll set up a photographic project and go out to Alum Bay and see if I can take some needly pictures when it gets a bit warmer. Because obviously when all this weather we're getting from across the Atlantic, it's a bit windy and stuff, and the needles takes the full brunt of it because that's the most exposed part of the Isle of Wight.
Speaking of weather, we're in the grips of that polar vortex. Yeah, and every night it's been going down to the minus 10s. Tonight's going to be minus 14.
Lovely. Anyway, right, so back to the horror of Fang Rock. So this thing has landed in the sea. And so has the Doctor and Leela, in fact, landed on the rock. I think someone's already died at this point.
And one of the lighthouse keepers appears to be the ancestor of Bruce from Enemy of the World.
Oh, okay.
Is that the one that looks like a bad Monty Python character?
I don't know what you're talking about with bad Monty Python character.
The head keeper of the lighthouse.
Why would he be a bad Monty Python character?
The way he's talking, his accent, and his way of, you know, forcing volume sounds like he's doing an imitation of what the Monty Python people do.
Okay, but yes, now you said that, I never noticed, but yes, he is in the Enemy of the World. Well done. I never noticed, but now you said that, I can see it very clearly.
Well, this one's got several people who've been in before.
I'm sure.
We also have Alan Rowe, who plays that older MP. We just saw him recently as Edward of Wessex in The Time Warrior. And apparently he was in the moon base, but I haven't seen the moon base, obviously.
Again, I didn't see that, but well done. Anyway, moving on. So,
he was in Full Circle. And Ralph Watson, Ralph Watson, I don't know.
Yes.
Hang on. Fred is saying something, but hang on a second.
Right, okay, yes.
Ralph Watson, who played who? Ben. That's the first guy who got killed.
Yes.
He was Captain Knight in Web of Fear. Okay. And he was also Edison Monster
Fellow. I'm so glad that this episode's got such a small cast. Anyway, what did Fred want to say?
She wants to listen in, so hopefully I'm going to put me on speaker. Hopefully this won't cause any issues. Let me know if it does.
Hello, hello, hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, Fred. Oh,
my phone's just gone off. Hi. Oh, I've got a notification. It's probably in Robert.
Hi.
Hi, Fred. So, what did you think of Horror Fang Rock then, Fred?
It was funny.
Oh, you saw it. There's me being all flippant. It was funny.
When Leela slapped the woman that was screaming.
Oh, yes.
That was funny.
Yeah. I think that's everybody's favorite moment.
Yeah, we haven't got to that bit yet. There's quite a lot of good Leela moments in this. But the bit we've got up to at the moment is Leela and the Doctor arriving at the lighthouse. I think it's just before the first death, actually. And I do love the little details of... So they go into the little sort of crew... sort of room, and the Doctor puts on a bowler hat, and there's a little, I think where there was a conversation between Vince and Ruben earlier on the table was an old Bovril bottle, and these little I quite enjoyed, and I was looking at during the
episode. What does Bovril taste like, anyway?
It's just a beefy sort of extract. In fact, it's a very nice drink, actually. I think you get some Bovril, put a spoonful of it in some boiling water, a couple of spoonfuls, stir it up, and you get this sort of slightly soupy sort of drink. It's very nice. I don't really like it on toast.
I'm going to see if the store here, the corner shop where I get my British stuff, has it, and I'll try it.
Do you know what it reminds me also of? Do you get OXO in the United States of America?
OXO, no, we like don't. I've just seen that in the British store near me. I've seen
meat
the OXO.
Stock. Basically, you're cooking up mince or something like that, you chuck in some OXO just to give it a bit of meat stock. And Bovril's a very similar thing to that, actually, but you can have it as a drink. In fact, you can have OXO as a drink, actually. Actually, that's made me think that's actually quite nice. I'm on a diet at the moment. If I want a nice meaty taste, bit of Bovril, bit of OXO in a cup, not a lot of calories. Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
OXO is comparable to what we here just call bouillon and bouillon
cubes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It probably is the same thing. It's just not called the same thing. Yeah, so... the Doctor and Leela are sort of making themselves at home, really, at the lighthouse. And there's Reuben going on about the beast of Fang Rock, because obviously Vince has seen this thing and he's a bit scared, and Reuben wants to calm him down by telling him some sort of ghost story. They have some dinner, and then Leela saunters around with a knife in true Leela fashion, and goes outside. And I don't know what she go outside for. Oh yeah, she sees the Rutan, didn't she? And then I think that's when it gets in, because it goes and kills one of the men downstairs, isn't he? In the generator room.
Ben,
that's it.
And the one that I keep saying is the bad Monty Python character.
What, Ben? He's a bad Monty Python character, is he?
Ben,
yeah.
Not
Ben.
Reuben.
No,
you're talking about Reuben.
No, Ben.
Okay. Sorry, Ben.
He keeps marching around like Eric Idle and talking in a fake voice. Yeah.
Oh, he is, even though he's not the longest serving of the lighthouse keepers, he's more of the engineer.
Yeah, he is the engineer.
He knows all that stuff. But I never considered him to be
a Monty Python character.
A Monty Python type character.
Oh, really?
Meanwhile.
Then you should watch him again and think of Eric Idle.
It's a boat, and the boat crashes into the rocks. And unfortunately, it does look a rather flimsy balsa wood sort of boat.
You know, I didn't have that impression. It didn't look that bad.
It looked
to
a bit
me.
Flimsy and sort of. Never mind. But the effect. Let us know that a ship had gone onto the rocks. And, of course, they have to go out and rescue the crew. But in hindsight, I think probably would have been better for the crew to stay on the ship. So they rescue it. Leela,
I think the Rutan would have found
cold,
them there, too.
Sorry, Louise Jameson, friend of the show, does some I'm cold acting while at the top of the lighthouse. And she has to sound the foghorn, and she does it in true teenage sort of unenthusiastic sort of fashion, no offence, Fred. And then we see the Rutan being dragged across the sea. They're crawling across the sea. I tell you, I'm disappointed they haven't actually tried to bring the Rutan back to Doctor Who, because they could certainly make something more of them than they did in this episode.
But. Well, as Fred was pointing out when we were first watching this, the Rutan does go with the Santarans, because you've got potatoes and cabbage.
Very good. I hadn't spotted that one, but again, I'm doing well on not spotting things. Is that a little groan there, Mary?
Mm-hmm.
I
yes.
think it goes quite well.
Well, to me, the Rutan looked more like a weather balloon.
Now, I thought the Rutan, when it was on the stairs, actually looked quite impressive. It's just when they had the long shots of it with its sort of dragging, sort of dangly tentacles, I suppose you'd call them.
What I didn't realize until this morning was that when the Rutan is coming up the stairs, that's, at first I thought it was CSO. It's not. They built a little miniature model of the staircase, perfect in all details, and they had it, they were dragging it up the stairs. Hmm. And so, and when it melts at the end, they kept having problems with those things melting, because they were gelatinous anyway. Yeah. So they just let it melt and then tilted the little miniature set and let it go down.
Fall down the stairs.
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Anyway, there's a scene in which the Doctor and Leela are talking about something at the top of the lighthouse, and Reuben's like stands still, and then he starts moving. And I always thought that was a bit where they cut to him too early, but he was in fact earwigging their conversation. But it looked a bit odd the way he sort of stands still and then just walked in. Sometimes they do that in dramas, don't they? They have the cue a little bit too late, and the actor will start his walking in just while pausing or something silly, you know. And also like the reaction to the crew to Leela. You got the sort of Lord Edward, is it? It's always Sir Edward, who's I'm saying Sir Edward as a joke, by the way, Kirby.
Yes.
Who looks
I had no problems with that.
Who looks at Leela in a sort of slightly sort of inappropriate way, shall we say?
Leering. Are we talking about
the word? Leering at Leela. Yeah. And then, of course, we get to know the characters quite quickly. We've got the we've got Henry, who's the MP and corrupt and wants to contact home. He's going to lose some deals at the stock market, and he's got some hold over the Colonel, who's obviously Sir Edward, and they sort of tolerate each other, don't they? And you've got the pathetic and annoying Adelaide, who mm-hmm. is very irritating. But I do like the fact that she's a bit like a Monty Python character, just screaming every 5 seconds. Right, so what happens there? Oh, yes.
That's one death I think everybody kind of cheered.
Yeah. Then the engineer of the ship who just completely disobeys everything that his superiors say. He takes over from Ben and trying to keep the generator going. Yes, I'll tell you what is really good about this.
I have some trouble telling some people apart there, because you've got the one guy is Hawkins. He's the young lighthouse keeper.
Yes.
He's playing an 18-year-old.
I didn't think of it as Hawkins. He said his name's Vince Hawkins.
Yeah, I didn't either. I just thought of him as Vince.
And then the guy from the ship was Harker.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's right, yes.
I didn't have any trouble keeping them apart.
John Abbott. Huh?
I didn't have any trouble keeping them apart.
Okay.
Nor did
John Abbott, who played Vince Hawkins, by the way. He Vince Hawkins is supposed to be 18 years old. John Abbott was 32 when he played him.
There you go. That doesn't surprise me.
Well, he looked very teenagerish to me. So
he played it quite well. Mm-hmm. Now this set and the fact that it's such a small cast and it's very claustrophobic, it all comes across so brilliantly.
Yes, it does.
And the fact that they were able to pad it out for four episodes in such a small space, with like I said, such a small cast of characters, really, really worked well.
I would have loved to have seen a making of with this. They didn't have one on the DVD.
The other thing,
I would have loved to see
this would make a really good play. You could put this as a stage play quite easily.
Yeah, I'd love to see how those sets were really laid out and what they look like from the outside, because the sets were marvelous.
Mm. Yeah. Very well. Even down to the details of where the dirt on the doors were, which was perfect.
Anyway,
everybody would automatically grab them.
Kirby, that we sometimes see some long shots of the lighthouse, and that does really look like Bell Rock Lighthouse from the long shots. The way it curves up, it's sort of like it's got a sort of curvy thing to it.
Yeah, the curve is much more like. But the interior, as I said, is based on the interior floors of the Needles.
Yeah. Right. So,
I'm trying to promote the Isle of Wight.
Yes, thank you. Reuben is. I think he ends up going down, and then and the lights go out, and you hear him scream, and that's the end of episode two. Of course, that's the end of poor old Reuben. But he doesn't. The actor doesn't die, just the character.
Oh, I just realized Reuben and Rutan.
So,
I'm sure there's a deep connection there.
This is 100% death count, by the way, of alternative
Colin Douglas
characters.
Does provide the Rutan's voice.
Does he? I was just saying, this is 100% death count of characters other than the Doctor and Leela. Yeah. Every character apart from the Doctor and Leela get killed in this story, which has got to be unusual.
Yes.
I think it's the only time that's ever happened.
Yeah. So basically the Doctor saves Earth, but not the main characters in the story. So basically, it's very easy to synopsize this story. It's a bit of it's just each character, which one's going to die next, I think you could probably call this, and how they how they're going to get rid of the Rutan. Because
yeah, it's like 10 Little Indians.
Yeah.
Terrence Dix was mentioning that very story in the darn, my brain's gone.
In the commentary?
In the commentary.
That's the
yes.
one. That's, oh, did he? That's the word we were
That's
looking
the
for.
Word.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you were going to elaborate on that. That's right, because...
Well, it's an Agatha Christie story where everyone gets...
Bumped off.
I've never read it.
No, I haven't either. But there was a moment in which Henry bribes Vince with £50, I think it was, mm-hmm. and then dies, and Vince very quickly sets fire to the money.
Which I found to be strange. Why would he do that?
Yeah, he's not exactly going to
be
accused of anything, is he?
Right. Yeah.
Of course, the other really good bit is where they go back and the colonel has ruined the telegraph machine, is it?
Yes, yes.
And the doctor's his reaction to that's really, really good. He says, mm-hmm. Our only hope of contact with the outside world's gone now. I thought that was really good. Of course, Reuben comes back as the monster, and he's quite good. And he does that little shaky thing, and then he does that sort of evil smile.
It's an evil smile.
Yeah. Gradually all get bumped off, and it's quite sad in a way that we lose Vince. And
Patty Russell, the director, was very surprised at how evil Colin Douglas could get with that smile.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm.
I've never seen this story before, but I thought for sure.
Shut up, that twat.
I thought that Vince would probably survive because he's, you know, the innocent teenager.
I'm wearing a onesie. I'm wearing a onesie. Oh, whatever. For God's sake. Alicia's been a pain in the ass.
I was saying that because I've never seen the story and I hadn't read anything about it yet. I was convinced as it was going along that there would be at least one survivor. I thought it would be Vince because he was the most innocent of everybody. You know, the only one not nasty or not scheming in some way. So I was rooting for Vince.
Yeah, but, I think we all were in a way.
To no avail.
But what I did enjoy was the confrontation between the doctor and the Rutan on the stairs. That was really, really good.
Why the Rutan would just kind of pause and everything and have a conversation.
But what did surprise me, though...
Kind of odd.
What did surprise me, though, was the fact that the Doctor didn't admit to being a Time Lord, that he just let the Rutan think that he was some sort of human.
Mm. Yeah,
I think that would have made a difference, you know.
Remember, don't fire until you see the green of his tentacles.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's Lee that actually sort of kills the monster.
Enjoy your death as I enjoyed killing you.
Great lines in this story. So that's basically it's great. You can probably say it's quite a short synopsis. It doesn't detract from how brilliant the story is, but it's quite a simple storyline, really, isn't it? And it has to be in such a small space. But thoroughly enjoyable, thoroughly well acted, really well made. You can forgive the sort of slight naffness of the reading itself, but because they were trying to achieve something. They were trying to make it a non-science fiction story, I think, but they just brought a bit of science fiction into it. It was really, really good. And the only thing I'd like to point out was on the old video, which was the Tom Baker years, which Tom Baker went through all his era, when he got to this story, Horror Fang Rock, he had to outline the brilliance of Louise Jameson, her acting in the way she shoveled this coal into the steaming doodah, whatever it's called, because she did it in a way of, for somebody who'd never done it before, she was able to, you know, portray that in her acting skills. So I loved it. Really good story. Mary, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I was totally engaged with it all the way through. The only episode that kind of dragged for me was the last one. And I can't exactly say why, except that it just seemed like I kept saying, you know, kind of get on with it. Because the the conversation with the Rutan and the schemes to kill it and then kill the mothership, to me, just, went on a bit long. And I thought that the setting was amazing, and the set's very well dressed. There were some CGI, like, you know, the doctor hanging on the outside of the tower was obviously added on because he was kind of moving around.
That did look a bit silly.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, the Rutan to me just looked like a weather balloon. And you say the ship that crashed was really cheap. I looked at that because I saw it twice, and I looked at it carefully the second time and thought it was pretty much okay. I didn't have a problem with that. Yeah. And I loved Louise Jameson in this. I think that this episode really showed the warrior in her.
Yeah.
And I love her desire to jump right out and be on the attack rather than the way most women of that time, and even of the time the people were watching it, where women tended to be the ones hanging back and being all scared. Yes, I think she did a great job. And I did hear that she, or maybe I saw it on Facebook, that she thought this was an episode written for Sarah Jane. Well, you couldn't be more wrong, because everything about the Leela character in this is so well done. I can't imagine that anyone would have thought that this would be a Sarah Jane story. I mean, I also did read that she and Tom Baker kind of had it out during the course of this episode. And some say that, oh, it's obvious they didn't get along. I don't think it was obvious at all. I think maybe they resolved their differences and they worked really, really well together in this episode. And that's part of what made it work so well for me.
It's so interesting you say about the spaceship, because it was very similar special effect that they used in the story we reviewed quite recently, in fact, The Time Warrior.
Yeah,
similar,
very much so.
Cop-out effect.
Yeah.
And this DVD didn't have reconstructed special effects.
No.
At least I don't think it does.
It doesn't, no. So, Fred, what did you think?
Fred has stepped out of the room.
Oh, you could have told me.
Well, she told us at the beginning.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, yeah. Alicia just popped in, by the way, to say, can I take her boyfriend home? She said, what time you finished podcasting? And can you take my boyfriend home? And I said, I'm wearing a onesie, for goodness sake. A TARDIS onesie. And I've got to go out in the car and take him home.
Well, it'll be nighttime. Who will see you? Just put a jacket over the onesie.
Anyway. So, Kirby, what did you think?
I love the story. Love, love, love the story. And I was afraid, Mary, that you were going to tear it to pieces from that one comment you made on Facebook.
Oh, I was just disagreeing with your initial assumption, was that we all hated the first story.
Because
you said, now we're all going to do these really different reviews of the next one. So I was saying, well, now hold your horses, because your assumption is wrong.
I saw this one back when I was watching Doctor Who back in college. I was 19, and I just love it, even though the Rutan is so pathetic. The rest of the story, the story is what holds it up, and Leela is just great.
Yeah.
There's not much more I can say about it. I can give you all sorts of trivia and stuff. Like I posted on Facebook how a later broadcast of this on in 1987 in Chicago, and I saw it originally, but way earlier than 1987 in Chicago. A later broadcast was when was interrupted by a pirate broadcasting.
And, the Max Headroom thing. I never heard about that. Thing. Yeah.
I posted a link on Facebook to a recording of the Max Headroom thing. It was very strange. By that point, I was not watching Doctor Who.
I don't
remember why my schedule had changed and I just wasn't watching.
I was busy in college myself, so.
So there we go. We loved this story called The Horror Fang. No, it's called Blast. I said it wrong. Horror Fang Rock.
Called Fang Rock.
Yeah, but when I say the
only character that rang false for me was the Ben character, as I've said several times already. To me, he just came off as a bad Eric Idle imitator.
When I call it the horror Fang Rock, I mean the story horror Fang.
I was messing it up. I was messing up too, and then I was watching it the second time.
And it said horror Fang Rock,
and I noticed it. Mm. I noticed it said horror Fang Rock. It's like it drives me crazy when people call the Rowan Atkinson thing
Mr. Bean.
The
Blackadder.
Rowan Atkinson Doctor Who thing.
Oh right. Yeah. Curse of Fatal Death. Curse of Fatal Death,
not Curse of the Fatal Death.
Is it not? Yeah. Anyway, can I move back on? Sorry, we're on to news now, but thanks, everybody. We liked it.
Well, do you want to hear Robert's opinion, or do you want to wait?
No, we'll do that for feedback, because I'm just going to do a little bit of news, because Tom Baker is 80.
Yeah. Yes.
And there's a little interview that he's done, if you go to DoctorWhoNews.net. There's a very interesting biography about Verity Lambert coming out. Very unlikely to get it, but if you do want it, it's by Richard Marsden, and it's a life and legacy of Verity Lambert. So that would be quite an interesting one. There's a new Doctor Who comic book adventures announced. Titan Comics and BBC Worldwide Americas have signed a new deal to publish all new Doctor Who comic book adventures. It was announced on Tuesday, the 21st of January. Oh, God, I can't speak. Which is rather awkward when it comes to audio presentations. What else we got here? Doctor Who triumphs at the National Television Awards. And about time, too. Now, somebody criticised me, saying, oh, yes, Doctor Who has won National Television Awards. Well, no, Matt Smith won it. But the show itself has not won awards since Tennant was the Doctor. So I'm absolutely delighted that Doctor Who... In fact, Magic wasn't so delighted, because when I jumped up in celebration, I accidentally elbowed him on the head. And he didn't like that at all. Web of Fear is coming out on UK DVD. The Science of Doctor Who is going to be broadcast in Australia. And that is basically news. So that was quite quick, wasn't it? Anybody heard anything else in relation to news?
No,
it's been pretty quiet.
It has indeed. So therefore, in line with your thoughts of going into feedback, I thought it might be a good idea to welcome new... what they call them, Kirby?
Members.
So Kirby, your voice went all very Mary-ish there.
I seem to be the supplier of words today.
Finishing sentences, yes. So, let's have a look. We now have 305 members. How many did we have last week?
I don't know.
Thanks for paying attention.
299, because you were making a big deal about getting a 300.
I had 299.
Yeah, it was 299.
So this, if I can remember who the last... Right, I think the last one I mentioned was Francesco Rallo last week. Does that sound familiar to you? No? Good.
No.
Okay, right, so I'm getting notifications now, so I do apologize.
I just made a reference that Matthew and Robert have done a Reese on us.
Yes, well, I just apologize, listeners, that if you have... Doo-doo, that's just me getting notifications on Facebook. Yeah, so the Young Ninth Doctor was added by Ben Shoveler last Monday. Christopher Prince, added by Matthew Kressel. Sarah Finity, added by myself. Gregory Gaydon, who was invited by Dinos Daniel on Wednesday. Anne-Marie Barnard, added by Matthew Kressel. William L. Chamberlain, added by me. Janice Neville, added by Matthew. And
who Chris should have been... Janice is a friend of mine. She should have been added by me. But Matthew keeps doing that.
Does he?
Adding my friends.
Ooh, you're going to have a fight over it. That sounds quite fun. and Chris Husted. So welcome all. And don't take any notice of Robert. He'll welcome everything and you'll get loads of... what I'm going to say is don't take any notice of Robert's notifications, because whenever anybody joins a group... In fact... Robert will like everything. You'll just get lots of notifications saying Robert Haynes likes this. Please don't leave the group because of it. Right then. Feedback. Do you want to do Robert's feedback while I sort out the rest of it, Mary?
All right.
says, "Hi, Mary. In case I can't make it to the podcast, I've had so little sleep lately and I'm still feeling so nauseous. Then I've got a little feedback I'd like you to read out. Firstly, hi. Sorry, couldn't make it on. Not feeling the best. What's new? Plus, 2:30 a.m. Too much for me at the moment. I love Horror of Fang Rock. It's a bit odd that it's another And Then There Were None so soon after Robots of Death. But I know it was a rushed replacement, so I'll forgive it. Loved that it's a period piece with good actors and actresses." And is Fred listening? Loved the bit where Leela slaps Idelaide. Well, she deserved it. I didn't think the special effects were too bad. I, too, thought that I was wondering if the cabbage-like appearance of the Rutan was in response to Tom Baker's desire to have a cabbage as his companion after Sarah. Loved the lighthouse setting, and the set dressing was great. Sometimes the CSO around the lantern didn't... around the lantern set didn't work. When the camera was static on a shot, it was okay, but not in panning and tracking shots. The smoke would follow the camera. Apparently, Mr. Baker and Louise weren't getting on so well during this, but I don't think it shows during production. Louise, as ever, is so wonderful. So, yes, I loved it, though the last episode wasn't as effective as the first three, maybe because the Rutan featured so much. It was better when it was more of an unknown. Catch you next time. Thanks for all the fish.
Yes, thank you, Robert. That's Robert Haynes. He does feedback for the show. He used to be on it at one point, didn't he? We also have
Alan Butcher just posted what to my thing saying that Matthew and Robert weren't on there.
We have this from, if I can get it to work, here we go. Trouble is you have to listen very carefully because Andy's audio is very quiet.
Yes.
Well, good afternoon, 20 Megabytes. It's Andy Nunny. It's 3:10 p.m. It's the Sunday afternoon, 26th of January. I've just been watching a fairly decent story the last week, rather better than the one we had to see last week. Thank you, Adam, for that. Horror Fang Rock. Now, I remember seeing this as a young teenager. I was about 13 at the time when it came out, and to be honest, I didn't think very much of it. However, on the rewatching it now, actually it's a rather good story. I mean, it's a very, very good script, very tight script. I mean, it is a classic base under siege. The difference here, though, is that at one point the Doctor points out he's actually locked the enemy in rather than locking them out, which does make it a base in a siege where you've got somebody inside there. Now, I get the feeling this was done on a very cheap budget because it must be one of the smallest number of sets that we've had since Edge of Destruction. If you think about it, you've got the boiler room, you've got the clue room, you got the lamp room, you got some stairs, and you got a little bit of outside filming. So, really was done very cheaply, wasn't it? I mean, that same bit of staircase is double for the entire lighthouse. Various things going on it. Crew room, tiny thing you only saw from one angle. Boiler room, again, really only seen from one angle. Lamp room, you saw a little bit. You saw a bit outside, but that's just ducked under rail, and there they were. So, very claustrophobic set this was that it was filmed in. And I think that really did make the tension a lot more understandable because there really was no escape from this. I mean, if you get out of the lighthouse, you're onto a rock and there's no escape from that rock as well. So it makes a very tight atmosphere. And I think that what makes the story such a success that it is. And there's obviously a lot of bloodshed. I mean, there's, what, eight other people on this other than Dr. Leela, and they all get killed off. It reminds me very much of the Agatha Christie story, And Then There Were None. I won't, for the sake of political correctness, give the original title. If anybody wants to come look at it, and certainly see what it was and probably understand it. But it's as they get bumped off one by one. And the last one to die, he died for honour. Well, yeah, Tom Baker being the Doctor, being a little bit generous there, because he actually died scrabbling around trying to pick up diamonds. But he did go willingly to help the Doctor. He was a soldier, he was a man of action, therefore. I suppose you say he died for honour. The rest of them, we've got three lighthouse keepers. I mean, Ben didn't last very long at all. Vince was a bit naive, old Rubish, Rubin, call him what you want. Bit of a cliché character. I suppose with the other two as well, you know, you've got the financier who just wanted to make a quick buck. You've got a rather pathetic young girl and a crewman who, well, yeah, he was a red shirt, wasn't he? I mean, there's even one crew he never even saw because he got bumped off. The captain, I think, got bumped off even before it even started. So another typical red shirt there. Of course, I guess Louise Jameson liked this because it meant she'd get rid of those contact lenses. The blinding flash as the doctors drew at the Rutan ship meant her eyes changed colour, though, of course, at first she thought she was going blinded and wanted to kill her. Fairly typical leader. I must say, she did look rather good in that rather tight-fitting sweater. Anyway, moving swiftly on there. And she was a very good character. She really is the Dr. Doolittle character. Is it Eliza? Who is almost an alien in an alien world. But it's easy to see how she can quickly adapt herself. You know, she's not stupid. You know, she's not a Tesh, but she's not really a savage as well, despite what the Doctor does call her for quite a bit of this. Now we come to the Rutans. This was, I think, the only time you actually got to see the Rutans. Yeah, you can see why as well. I mean, space cabbage, I think, as Alan T. Butcher referred to them. And I actually thought at one point in time they looked rather like an overgrown tennis ball, but... yeah, terrifying alien monsters who kill you with electrical charge. You know, they really was on the cheap, and the special effects for all this really just on the cheap, again, coming down to there was a very low budget for this story, which I don't think detracted the fact it was very well written. There was a definite plot, and it was moving along. It moved along quite quickly, and you can see how people come in and drop out of it, and in the end you've only got Doctor and Leela. But they just walk away. They've killed off, what, 8 people have died, plus an alien monster, plus how many crewmen. And they just walk away with this. You could say that, in a way, the Doctor is completely amoral. You know Leela is, because she's obviously quite happy to kill people off and doesn't blink an eye, doesn't see anything wrong with that at all. But I think we do see the immorality of the Doctor here, doing what he has to do, and just getting on with it. Not quite as bloodthirsty as it has been at times, but certainly not the good character that perhaps you would have us believe. So all in all, yes, it's a very good story, so thank you for that. One thing I must pick up from Mary, from the previous story, Twin Dilemma. Lieutenant, Lieutenant. 2 words for you. Arkansas, Kansas. Can you explain those 2, please, me? Be seeing you. 6.
6?
Six. Go on then. Arkansas, Kansas, then, Mary.
Well, since I used to live in Arkansas, Arkansas is correct, and the people say Arkansas are wrong.
Yeah. I've never heard anybody say Arkansas.
I have.
Oh, really?
They're just wrong. I think there's one state that the Arkansas River goes through where they call it the Arkansas River.
Oh, so I've never heard that either.
It's not okay. The point he's trying to make is the spelling is exactly the same, and yet the pronunciation is completely different. Therefore,
well, I mean,
Lieutenant,
but all the
Lieutenant.
Letters are there. You could say Arkansas or Arkansas because the letters are all there.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying with Lieutenant and Lieutenant is that where is the F or the PH or the thing that would give it that sound? Mispronunciations versus invented letters is my issue.
Okay. Right, I've got some more feedback. This is from Dinos Daniel via Facebook, and I do hope I've got it all here because I tried to copy and paste it so I could get it easily. So if it's not here, I do apologise. Adam Pearson, you have some feedback. Facebook feedback, sorry. Good day, Adam and the cast of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. When at Whovention, Louise Jameson talked a little about filming Horror of Fang Rock. He put THFR, so he put a T in there where it didn't need to go. Louise mentioned that the part was written for Sarah Jane Smith and that she had to keep getting the lines changed to fit more with Leela. Less helpless screaming Doctor. Louise also mentioned how it was always cold and that it was one where everyone dies, not one of her favourites, to say the least. Louise much prefers the Sunmakers. Well, that's a really good story as well, actually. So there you go. That was Dinos Daniel.
Someone on Facebook also mention that she said that in the commentary and was quickly corrected?
Yes, I was responding to comment you just read. Because she tried to tell that story, and Terrence Dix immediately told her, no, this was not written for Sarah Jane.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, if people in Kansas and Colorado say Arkansas.
Okay. Anyway.
But Arkansas passed a state law in 1881 that it was pronounced Arkansas.
Okay, well, it's like people in America calling Birmingham, Birmingham.
Well, again, it's just mispronunciation of the letters that are there.
Right, moving on.
let's see what I can find about that.
Okay. What about diarrhea?
Oh, it's one of the first things on Wikipedia. Diarrhea.
Diarrhea. It's spelled D-O-R-I-A-G-G-G-G. Never mind about spellings. Move on to Jeff Waddell. Sorry. Now you see, you made me pronounce Jeff Waddell wrong.
Middle English spellings of lieutenant suggest that the pronunciation existed as lieutenant back then. Apparently, the old French variant spelling L-U-E-F was in there at one point and got changed to L-I-E-U.
I do love the old adage, if in doubt, blame the French.
Yes. As far as I'm concerned, I'll say lieutenant if I'm referring to British lieutenant. I'll say lieutenant for Americans. So there.
Jeff Waddell says, I've watched this one many times. Brilliant dialogue, brilliant story, similar to Talon's in that if you could replace the Rutan and Rat respectively, they'd both be nigh on perfect. But average effects doth, says this is what he wrote, doth not brilliant stories ruin. I suppose he meant to write that. And everybody dies and don't come back. Ah, those were the days. That was Jeff Waddell. Alan Butcher.
Is he celebrating that everybody dies and doesn't come back?
I suppose he is. Alan Butcher says, Adam, I tend to think of The Horror of Fang Rock as a dull, limited, plodding story with dodgy effects, except when I actually watch it. When I do, of course, it is revealed to be an atmospheric and engaging tale full of great acting and some of the best dialogue Terrence Dix ever produced. Despite the claustrophobic scenario, the churn of characters and events keeps the story moving, and the result is an archetypal Doctor Who story with both regular and guest cast on top form. I don't need to drag out the many brilliant quotes, as you will already have highlighted them, but Terrence Dix is a master of structuring a story to avoid it getting stale, as he did so brilliantly right back to the 10-part The War Games. So this simple story provides a perfect medium for these witty, sparkling and portentous utterances. And where else do we get Rutans? Well, big finish, I suppose. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you.
Does anyone want to hear the list of quotes that I extracted from this?
As long as it doesn't take another half an hour.
No.
Do five. I'll let you do five of them. So pick your top five.
Gentlemen, I've got news for you. This lighthouse is under attack, and by tomorrow morning, we might all be dead. Anyone interested? A waste of time. I, too, used to believe in magic, but the doctor has taught me about science. It's better to believe in science. Mm. I feel something wrong here.
Is that five?
No.
Two
more.
All right, yes.
Quiet. Has she never seen death before?
Yes. Yeah. Is that it? No, okay.
When you've seen one Rutan, you've seen them all.
Okay.
That was really well waiting for. Thanks for that, Kirby. And it's now time for this week's very small edition of You Won't Get This One. Oh, we've gone quiet over there. This is going to be interesting, isn't it?
I wonder what sort of excuse I can come up with.
What I'm waiting for. The excuses.
It will be a big excuse if you don't manage to win this
one. There's not enough people. I won't have any time to think.
There's not enough people. That's right.
At least I won't have to add any extra questions this week.
I can't take the pressure.
Okay, right. Question number one, if I can get them to load up, goes to... goes to Mary. Who is the... That sounds like Reese's podcast.
Who's it going to?
Mary. Who
okay,
is
I
the,
missed it. You dropped out.
Who is... I know everybody's dropping out. I'm getting gapping left, right and centre, but I'm going to carry on anyway. Who is the man who witnessed the spaceship crashing into the sea? Mary. Who is it?
Oh, who witnessed it?
Yes.
I know. I think it's Vince.
It is Vince.
Yes.
Kirby. Where did Ben think that the cold air came from?
Good luck.
The sea, I don't know.
Nope. Mary?
Don't know. Nope.
The answer is Iceland. Mary.
Oh.
How often did Vince have to sound the foghorn?
I know.
How often? Don't remember.
Go on then, Kirby.
I win. Every 2 minutes.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
Where is the Doctor attempting to land the TARDIS when they end up on Fang Rock?
Brighton.
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
They got there eventually with Romana.
Thank you. Who was the Rutan's first victim?
Oh, my least favorite character, Ben.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
What does Vince talk to when he gets fed up talking to Reuben and Ben?
I don't know.
Mary.
Himself.
The seals. Mary.
Oh, the seals. Oh, yes. What?
Yes. What does Leela find in a pool while on a walk around the rock?
Dead fish.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
What is the cliffhanger for episode 1?
I don't know.
Mary, what's the answer?
Was it the ship about to hit the rocks?
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
Who brings the rope when they go to rescue the people from the beached yacht?
The doctor.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
Who was the first shipmate to enter the crew room of the lighthouse?
The millionaire guy, whatever
Correct.
His name was.
Henry, yeah.
Okay.
Mary.
Yes.
What does the doctor say when Henry asks him if he's in charge?
Oh, I don't remember.
Kirby?
I couldn't hear you. What?
What does the doctor say when Henry asks him if he's in charge?
No, but I'm full of ideas.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
Where was the yacht heading before it crashed?
Just to the north of you. It was heading to Southampton.
Correct. Mary.
Yes?
Who did Leela nearly clob over the head with a shovel?
The doctor.
Nope. Kirby.
Oh.
That guy from the ship who...
Whose name is?
What's his name?
Exactly. That's the question.
Not Hawkins, Harker.
Oh.
Correct. Kirby.
It's my turn?
Yes, it's your turn, isn't it? Because you've got the point.
Master?
Yeah. What did Henry...
Yeah, it's his turn.
What did Henry call Harker when he went down to the generator room to investigate Reuben's death? So the millionaire bloke, Henry. What did he call Harker when he went down to the generator room to investigate Reuben's death?
I have no idea.
Wow.
Mary?
Yeah. Oh, it's something not flattering, but I don't remember.
The answer was insubordinate ruffian.
Yeah.
Mary?
Yes?
When waiting outside Reuben's room, the doctor sends Leela away to do what?
Oh, to deliver a message to... Vince?
Yeah, but the message was on mine.
Message was about keep the boiler
it was.
Going. Okay.
Yes.
I wasn't sure what you were going
Let's
for.
Keep
there.
The boiler pressure up. Kirby.
Master?
How much did Henry try to bribe Vince with?
It was either 200 or 500 pounds. 200?
Nope. Mary?
Well, it was 100 total, but 50 now. Correct. 50 later.
Oh. Okay.
Correct. Right, so Mary.
Yes?
Which act of 1881 covers lighthouses?
This one I wrote down because I knew I wouldn't remember it. It was the something damage act, the malicious damage Correct. Act of 1861.
Kirby.
Master.
What does Leela call Henry behind his back?
You dropped out there, I'm sorry.
What does Leela call Henry behind his back?
I don't remember.
Mary?
Oh, I remember.
Well, you remember now. Go on, then. Give you another chance.
The cowardly one.
Correct. Lucky there, wasn't he, Mary?
He was, because I was going to say, I don't know.
All right, Mary.
Well, just give me one point. Give me one point.
No, you got two. Mary, what colour was Adelaide's dress?
Oh, pink is the colour comes
Correct.
To mind. Rose.
Kirby.
Master.
What factor does the the Roctor? What factors does the Doctor reference when he realizes he has locked the danger in with them?
What? Huh?
What factor does the Doctor reference when he
realizes? Oh, the chameleon factor.
Correct.
You keep dropping out.
I can't help that. I'm not Skype, am I? I'm just on it. Right. Mary.
Yes.
What does the Doctor find by the generator after Vince's death?
I know it's a little silver cylinder, but I don't remember what
he called
it.
What did he call it? Okay, Kirby?
It's a control thing for...
What did he call it?
I don't know what he called
it. We can both describe
it. He called
it
a sort of power relay.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Kirby?
Master.
What did the Rutan once control the whole of?
Some part of the galaxy. I don't remember.
Okay, go
I
on
don't
in.
Remember either.
Well, not just some part of the galaxy. It's Mutter Spiral, which is essentially what this galaxy is called. Right. I've lost where I am now. So this is Mary's go, isn't it?
Yeah.
What insult does the Doctor hurl at the Rutan while it is on the stairs?
Which insult?
Yeah. I don't remember.
Go on in, Kirby.
He's insulting him right and left. I don't know.
There's one insult that specifically aimed at it. One of the first
Oyster
things.
Face?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
All right, Mary. Hang on, Kirby, sorry. Kirby.
Master?
Kirby.
What planet did the Rutan come from?
Ooh,
Ruta something.
Yes.
Ruta 5, I
no,
don't know.
Mary?
No, Ruta 3.
Correct. All right, Mary.
Yes?
What kind of infrastructure do Rutan spaceships have?
Crystalline?
Correct.
Thank you, yes.
Kirby, when is Leela to fire at the Rutan as instructed by the Doctor?
say again?
When is Leela to fire at the Rutan as instructed by the Doctor?
It's one of those good lines.
Oh, when he sees... When the green of its tentacles.
Correct.
Yes.
Mary.
Yes.
Where did start again. Where did the Colonel eventually find the diamonds?
Oh, in the belt, the security belt.
Correct.
Body belt.
Yep. Kirby.
A belt.
Indeed. Kirby, what did the Doctor complain about when he nearly got caught in Leela's crossfire?
That his scarf was singed.
Correct. Mary.
Yeah, speaking of his scarf, did you notice how they had it so that it was completely out of the way for the entire story. It was probably all tacked down in various places to keep it from getting long and in his way.
I saw how he would toss it over his shoulder all the time.
Yeah.
Well,
there was one row which was coming undone that I saw that too. I wanted to get that and snip it off.
Yeah, the big snag on the front. Yeah,
yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Okay, Mary.
Yes.
What is the Doctor hoping to knock out using the light and the diamond, i.e., laser?
The mothership.
Specifically.
Oh, no! I can't get more specific than that.
Kirby?
Yeah, I don't have anything more specific than that either.
The specific answer is the mothership's antigrav. Right.
Oh, okay.
Kirby? Okay. What did Leela pick up on her way out of the lighthouse?
Her knife.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mary?
Yes?
What caused Leela's eyes to change colour after the flash?
Well, I thought it was the flash.
Yes, but the Doctor said.
Yeah.
The reason.
Oh, it, something of the, pigmentation. I don't remember. It's something about how it changes her,
Kirby, I'll give you a point for saying pigmentation. What's the other word, Kirby?
I don't know.
There was pigmentation dispersal, was what he.
Dispersal.
Okay. Oh, by the way, with that knife, Louise Jameson in the commentary was saying that knife was definitely had a dull blade because in a previous story, she had had a sharp one and almost took a crew member out. I think it was in Robots of Death.
Okay, right. Kirby, your question. Who was the production unit manager for Horror of Fang Rock?
Whose question?
Your question.
Mine?
Yes, yours.
Me?
Yes.
That would be J&T.
Correct.
Yeah, I noticed that.
That leaves us with one last question. For this, and this, at the moment, the scores are tied at 22 points each. So this is the decider.
Really?
Oh, great.
Who composed the incidental music for Horror of Fang Rock?
I don't know.
I don't know. Either.
For God's sake, right, we're going to have to go.
So can we have a tie?
No, you can't have a tie, sorry.
Yeah.
Work that way. We're going to have to do a random question like this. Here we go, right, then. I'll give one question each.
Who did?
Until somebody gets something wrong. Who did what?
Oh, who did the
Dudley
the
Simpson.
Music. Oh.
Dudley Simpson, right. So I'm going to go until somebody gets something wrong. This is how we work our tiebreakers on this quiz. This is going to Mary first. Which actor portrayed the first Doctor in the 1983 anniversary story, The Five Doctors? Richard Herndl, Richard Harris, Richard Griffiths, or Richard Wilson?
I don't know. Richard Wilson, I guess.
Nope. So you've got that wrong. So you've got to hope that... What's the answer, Kirby?
The first one, Richard Herndl.
Yeah, don't get any points for that, but... so basically, if you get this next question right, you've won. If you don't, then it carries on to the next one. Right, this is the next question. When she decided...
Is this for me?
Yes. When she
Master?
Yes. When she decided to stop travelling with the Fifth Doctor, what were Tegan's final words as the TARDIS dematerialised in front of her?
Doctor?
Nope. Mary?
I've only seen that story once,
I don't care.
Remember.
Mary?
No, I don't.
The answer is Braveheart Tegan, Doctor, I will miss you. So you're back in it again, Mary, and here's your question. Complete the story title. Something in Venice.
Vampires
Correct.
In Venice.
Okay, right. Kirby.
Master?
Pressure's on you again. In which year did the Silurians first appear in Doctor Who?
I don't know. You mean really?
Yes, as in chronologically.
Real.
As in not in the story in the
fictional?
World. No, in the world. As in
the world,
in our world.
In real life. Let
yes.
me think. That would have been. I'm gonna say 1971.
No, Mary wins. It was 1970.
Wow. Oh.
off by 1 year. Oh.
Congratulations, Larry. Larry wins the quiz.
Your excuse for
me. Gloat on.
I haven't seen that story yet.
There we go.
I haven't either, actually. But then I got an easy question.
Right, just in the nick of time.
Did you see Ian Kirk has said?
Yes, I've just said, just in the nick of time, we have some audio from Ian Kirk. And it goes something like this.
Hello, 20 Megabuck Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Horror of Fang Rock by Terence Dix. In the first scene, the lighthouse seems to move a bit against the background, like a scene in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where the sea is still and the land moves in and out. When he arrives, the Doctor is looking for Ben, the radio expert. Later on, Leela is stuck in the boiler. She's become a shoveler.
Oh my God.
We had a crashed Sontar in The Time Warrior, and we have a crashed Druten. Everybody dies. The lighthouse crew, the people from the ship, the Ruten mothership. Louise Jameson, friend of the show, gets to ditch the brown contact lenses when their character sees the explosion. It seemed to go on a long time. The cast were good. It did remind me of Upstairs Downstairs.
Yes.
Replicas of the scarf are available from lavazi.co.uk. Oh. For now.
Nice one, Ian.
Oh, thank you,
Ian.
Thank
goodness for that. That was Ian Kirk.
Ian. He probably wants Lavarzi to send him one.
Yes. Excuse me. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Right, I'm just going to have a quick perusal of our Facebook group. That's the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, which you can join. As a lot of people seem to be doing. And I have a funny feeling that a lot of people seem to be doing, not realising it's a Facebook group in relation to a Doctor Who podcast. There's lots of postings, in fact. Oh, Bell Rock Tavern, who put that? That was Jeff Waddle, who's copying me, because I've posted some stuff on the group in relation to lighthouses in connection to the story, because obviously the exterior, I'm quite convinced, is based on Bell Rock, where, as you say, the interior was based on the Needles. Are there lighthouses in America, by the way? That's probably a bit of a stupid question.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure there are. Yeah. Mm. Especially on the East Coast.
Yes. That's really weird. When you said something there, Mary, it sounded like there was some sort of spooky after effect that followed your voice. That's really quite astounding, actually. Can you speak again?
Is it still happening? It still happening?
Yeah. Cool. There was... going back to the National Television Awards, when Matt Smith won his award, it was Jenna Coleman and Stephen Moffat who went up to accept the award. But when Doctor Who won it, it was just Jenna that went up. Wonder why.
Yeah. Mm.
And I did post something on Facebook. There was a very rather controversial thing by DoctorWhoWorldwide.com in relation to Stephen Moffat ruining Doctor Who. It provoked quite a discussion, which I didn't really get involved in. And I was hoping that Ben would, but he didn't. So it's quite funny, really. So that, I'm sorry, it's a bit short, isn't it? I mean, but what can you say? We've covered everything, really. Or can you think of anything we haven't covered? No? Okay,
no,
fine.
I can't.
Good grief. This is the shortest 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast in ages.
Not necessarily.
And we've had, like, no interruptions.
No. Not necessarily, because I'm supposed to be recording with Ben tomorrow, but whether I get a chance to or not remains to be seen.
Maybe you can get our other two miscreants in tomorrow as well.
Nah.
I'm not going to get up early.
Oh, when are we recording next week? When are we recording?
Me neither.
Never mind. When are we recording next week? Monday?
I suppose so.
If we have to, I'd rather do it on. Oh wait.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be better. It would be better for me on Monday because I'm not sure which day next weekend I'm going to Chinese New Year.
Okay, well, we'll go for Monday simply because Deb moans about me doing it on Sundays. And also, what are we reviewing next week?
The Invasion.
Oh my God, how am I going to fit that into a week? Okay, but that's going to be fun. I like that story.
The Invasion is that a six-parter?
It's eight-parter.
Oh my goodness.
What? Really?
Yes.
Wow. Oh boy.
Well, then we better do it on Monday to give the extra time.
That's what she said.
And you need to consult your randomizer. That's what it's called.
I know.
And start giving us some others to add on.
I know. I do try. I'm just a very busy man, you know. I will try and get around to doing it. Unless someone else wants to do it, of course. Because I've got every Doctor Who story. I can, you know, as long as it's something I've already done, if somebody else can decide, I'm quite happy with that. In the meantime... Oh, sorry.
Well,
I should
Kirby,
sound a bit more
do you want to take
cheerful.
That on?
I would need a list of...
Oh, here we go.
List of what we've done.
Well, you know what you've got and what you can get hold of. And you also know
you're
I've got every story.
You're usually the first one to tell us. Yeah.
You know what
you're
we've...
You're usually the first one to tell us what we've done.
Yes. All you have to do is search the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast website. And if you do a search of a title of a story...
Do you want me to do randomized ones
sort
or
of.
Just select?
Random's fine.
Huh?
Random's fine. If you want
to
be...
Give us three choices.
Yeah.
Give us three choices, you know, for the next 3 or 4 weeks and let us respond.
Yeah, we've got enough members of the group now to vote on it. Yes. Thank you. And if you want to send in feedback,
what
people seem to be doing these days, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And I'd like to say thank you very much for listening to the show, and thank you two for joining me at least.
Oh, you are very welcome. Yes. Thanks for all the feedback. That was great today.
Is, indeed.
Thanks for all the fish, not the
So until next week, daddy bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Elton. Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm Colin Baker. You lucky people, are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, the best podcast on the pod.
And it's my delight to welcome onto the show now Mr. Ben Shoveler.
Good hello.
Good morning, Ben. And guess what?
Well, it's good morning now, but it might not be good morning when our pod grammars are listening.
Good day, Ben. Mind you, that sounds
good
a bit Australian.
Good day to you, sir. That should be the standard welcome from now on.
Yes.
Good day.
Now, obviously, we've done the or virtually everything on the show, so this is a bit of a sort of improv. Never done improv on the 20 Megabyte podcast before, so it'll be quite interesting.
Best improv. Hmm. Each other a scenario, and we have to act out some sort of story.
Well, rather like Stephen Moffat does. For
well, yeah, he makes it up as he goes along as well, doesn't he? So. It's
there
all planned. It's all planned.
Right,
yes.
We have already done feedback, but I have got a piece of feedback, and this is very rare. It's actually going to be played for a second time, so as you can get the benefit of it. So here we go. It's not the cable. I hope this works.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Horror of Fang Rock by Terence Dix. In the first scene, the lighthouse seems to move a bit against the background. Like a scene in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where the sea is still and the land moves in and out. When he arrives, the Doctor is looking for Ben, the radio expert. Later on, Leela is stoking the boiler. She's become a shoveler.
Yay!
We had a crash Sontar in The Time Warrior, now we have a crashed Druten. Everybody dies. The lighthouse crew, the people from the ship, the Ruten mothership. Louis Jameson, friend of the show, gets to ditch the brown contact lenses when their character sees the explosion. It seemed to go on a long time. The cast were good. It did remind me of Upstairs Downstairs. Replicas of the scarf are available from lavazi.co.uk. Bye for now.
Yeah, so obviously there was a bit of that that was directed at you, so I thought you'd like to hear it.
Which bit was that then?
Grief. Okay, right, what I thought it might be good fun to do is have a look around, a random look around the internet to see what's being said about Doctor Who. What's come to light today is apparently later on today, they're going to reveal the 12th Doctor's, and I use the term 12th with a little inverted commas.
It's not 12th Doctor.
The 12th-ish Doctor's new costume. Doctor. Is it? The 14th? Well, it's the 13th, really, because of the
well, no, 10th. It's not. It's the 14th, because if it was the 13th, he wouldn't have had to have a whole new set of regenerations, yes, would
but,
he?
But the 10th Doctor regenerated but kept the same face. I saw it surely
that makes he was the 10th and the 11th.
Oh, okay. I'm with you now.
He's the 14th. Otherwise, this is the whole point of it, isn't it? As I said, if he's not the 14th, if he was the 13th Doctor, he would not have had to have a whole new cycle of regenerations, which he had to get to continue living. So therefore, yes. 13 down, 14 is now in incumbency.
Yes,
I understand the arguments that other people put up, but they're all wrong.
Yes, but I accept this. Oh, look, I can hear myself. And look, I can hear Howard Donald's on Twitter. I'm going to follow him. I just followed up Mark Owen this morning. Now, Howard Donald's on there.
So. Are you on some sort of Take That thing now, then?
I like Take That.
I love Take That, but, you know, don't go following them all on Twitter.
We'll do. Because the good thing about that is you get first-hand news on what's happening in regards to their forthcoming new recording session.
I just follow Gary Barlow. That way you find everything
well,
out.
Well, that's how I ended up following Mark Owen and Howard Donald, because obviously they've been advised to go on Twitter by Gary Barlow. Right then,
Doctor Who, that's where we are, isn't it? So you were about to tell me that something's going to happen today to do with Doctor Who.
Apparently, yes. Peter Capaldi is going to have his costume revealed today. But someone's tweeted, RIP Matt Smith. I'm dread to think what that's all about, so I'm just going to click on it and see what it says. Get Glue. What's that all about then?
Is it some sort of dodgy advert?
Not sure. Somebody's drawn a picture of some poem of some variety. Well, that was a waste of time, wasn't it?
Well, generally, when you see things saying Matt Smith RIP, I think you'd probably be a bit bigger in the news than one person tweeting it on Twitter if the unfortunateness had happened.
Somebody called Scouse Hoovian, which obviously I've got to be careful my wheels don't end up on bricks, but I'm going to have a look at this, see what it says. It's people are posting links to strange websites that have got nothing to do with Doctor Who. That are being let down by Twitter.
I take it you've talked about the National Television Awards.
Yes, I have talked about the National.
Yeah,
and I also talked about the fact the dog got injured during the results of the National Television Awards. Because when Matt Smith won the Best Actor, I jumped up and accidentally elbowed the dog in the head. He was a bit dazed for a while. I was a bit concerned about him for a bit. Yes, well, it was accidental.
It was better than Southampton scoring a goal, was it?
It was on a par with it. Because it doesn't happen very often, whereas Southampton scoring goals happens quite regularly, so you do get a bit complacent, I suppose, is the word, yeah.
Well, let's be fair, you know, with the NTAs, I'm not the biggest awards fan in the world. I don't really think they mean that much, because at the end of the day, it's down to the people who could be bothered to vote for it, isn't it?
Nah.
Did you vote?
I did.
See, I didn't, you see.
Mm. I voted on both. Both the original, because there's two votes. One is to, you put your vote in, then it gets narrowed down. The most popular ones become the nominees, and then you vote again for the winner. So, yes, I did two votes on it. And also try to apply for a free ticket for the NTA, because you can buy tickets for the O2, but I tried to get some free ones.
I just think, you know, it's completely down to the people who vote. Now, there could have been a billion people who didn't bother voting for the whichever programme came second or whichever actor came second, you know. And so it's just down to the people who can be bothered. And although I like Doctor Who, I couldn't be bothered to vote. Not because I didn't want to vote for Doctor, just because I couldn't be bothered, you know, whatever.
And I suspect most people, in fact, most Doctor Who fans probably would have gone down that road. That's why it's pretty good that it won the award, because obviously the general public who just watch Doctor Who because it's a TV show they may or may not enjoy, as you know, you do with a lot of TV shows, something's coming on, oh, I'll watch that, I quite like that. But you don't necessarily become a fan of it, it's just something you like watching. And those people have voted for Doctor Who to win this award, which is very appropriate.
It's good as well, because it should have, you know, it should be winning, because it is. Although it's still being ruined by Moffat, it is still, you know.
Oh, yes, yeah. Fine
program.
Even bad Doctor Who is some of the best television programs.
No, I agree. I mean, even though I think I sometimes I need to clarify why what I, you know, say and what I think about Doctor Who and how. But of course, I love the TV series. I love watching it, and even the, you say, the bad episodes where I think Moffat's making a complete monkey out of us all. You know, there's some of them are still quite. Some of them are not as good as others, but they're all still good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and although I do quite often criticise Matt Smith's era and you know, Stephen Moffat's writing. My point there is, I'm not saying it's kind of like 1 out of 10 rubbish. No one should be watching it.
You just compare it with all other Doctor Who.
Yeah, especially, you know, my favourite era, which was Russell T Davies's era with old DT in control.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's when I say, oh, it's rubbish. I'm not saying, oh, it's 1 out of 10. I'm saying, you know, it's probably a 5 or a 6 or maybe a 7 in some episodes cases. The storylines do annoy me. Stephen Moffat does wind me up with the way he does seem to make everything up all the time. But
yeah, he's a bit arrogant.
You know, it's not that I don't like it. It's just I'm disappointed by it sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you sit there thinking, no, that could be better. That didn't need to be that stupid story arcs and that aren't needed sometimes. But if they are needed, they should be done properly. But, you know, that's all it is in that. Yeah, disappointment more than anything else sometimes. So.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so I'm just having a look through for stories which you may not have touched on yet, but I can't see anything on that website. So
yeah, we have tried to look at a bit of news yesterday, but there wasn't really much going on. Like you say, you talked about the NTAs. And I say that's why I really celebrated it, because the fact that it was a public vote, and Doctor Who obviously is. It took a bit of time, I think. Although I was criticised by saying that it was the first time Doctor Who had won since Matt Smith had become the Doctor, but Matt Smith has indeed won the Best Actor award in that time anyway. But the show itself has not won it. The only thing I thought was a bit bizarre about those NTAs was they put in a sort of a milestone award. And I thought, oh, great, they're going to give it to Doctor Who, 50 years. No, they give it to Anton Deck, 25 years, sorry. I thought, what? What's that all about? 50 years?
25 years.
Slightly more of a milestone than 25.
Yeah, but there's two of Anton Deck, so 225.
Yeah, but there's 14 doctors. Well, 13-ish. 13 stroke 14.
Well, let's not get bogged down with numbers.
There you go. Right, what have we got coming up here? I've seen another tweet that says that the costume is imminent. I wonder what we're going to get. I do hope, because I do like the Doctor to wear a long coat. I don't know why, but I feel that not so much the Victorian-y sort of thing, but I do. Matt Smith's parting costume was a favourite of mine, with the purple coat and the purple waistcoat. Not so much the Dicky Bone, wasn't really bothered about that, but I do feel he became more Doctor-y when he had the long coat.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back through history, then obviously, you know, you had 5 and 6 and 4 occasionally wore longer things, and 3 wore his capes, and
most of them had long coats. So I'm looking up at my figures up on that wall there. We got Hartnell with his long cloak more than a coat.
Yeah, see, again, he wore something, you know, vastly beyond the waist, more towards the knee, didn't he? So, yep.
I know Troughton was more renowned for a shorter jacket, but wearing a great big sort of
But again, it wasn't a waist cut, you know, it wasn't like a suit jacket, was it? It wasn't like a cut off at the, say, just below the waist. His went between the knee and the waist. It was just nearer the waist than the knee. So again, it wasn't a long, long jacket, but it was, you know, and then so 3 had all of his capes and
he more or less had brilliant outfits, velvet jackets, but lots of long capes. Obviously,
he did wear you know, jackets though. Didn't have, you know, proper waist length jackets more often than not. Hmm. Although, as you say, he did cover it with his capes quite a lot.
Yeah, the fourth Doctor wore a long coat towards the end of his tenure, and that was one of my favourite.
The purpley
coats.
One.
Yep, burgundy purpley. Yes, brilliant coat that is.
Yeah.
Of course, we had the fifth Doctor crooked, wearing his longish sort of jacket.
Sixth Doctor with that
longish good old jacket,
coat of many colours.
Yeah, the seventh had a sort of medium length jacket.
Well, that was more of a shorter jacket, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was, you know, that wasn't, you know, the Davison length of his cricket. He won. It was a shorter one. It was a little bit longer than a normal jacket would be, but yeah, not massively long.
Nope.
This was come to, isn't it? They were talking about jacket lengths.
And of course, we had the Eighth Doctor, who, when he first regenerated, had a long jacket, but in the Time of the Doctor, was it? Night of the Doctor, sorry, the Night of the Doctor, he had a completely different costume.
Yeah.
And I actually prefer his costume in the Night of the Doctor, to be honest.
Yeah, so did I. I thought it looked really modern, didn't it? He
was war battered.
Yeah, and then obviously the War Doctor wore the same kind of thing as Eccleston.
Yeah, but with a scarf around his neck.
With a leathery
short scarf
kind of thing going on. Yeah, short scarf, no long scarves going on there.
Well, the Knight's wearing a leather jacket and a sort of V-neck T-shirt.
I did like that look. I think that suited Eccleston. It did really indeed. Well.
And then we went back to Tennant, who had a long sort of coat.
A trench coat, wasn't it?
Or a jacket, depending on what he wanted to wear. I prefer, my doctor to have a longish coat or the option of wearing one as and when. So I hope that when they do that, that's what the 13th, 14th, or whatever it is, Doctor actually ends up wearing. And I hope we find out soon, because that'd be really, really good. Right, what we got coming up here? I keep on getting new tweets coming through in relation to Doctor Who, but most of them are pretty lame and don't really have much to say about the show. Somebody tweeted, "What if the Doctor did exist but is now dead?" What?
What? Say that again?
What if the Doctor did exist but is now dead? That's a bit of a stupid question, so... What's the point?
Well, it's only stupid in the fact that he could well be dead, but because of the timeline crossing and the way that we view his adventures on telly, then we haven't caught up with his
presence. Well, he did die in the Night of the Doctor, but he was brought back to life by, of course, the Sisterhood of Khan, is it? I don't know what it's called. I'm looking at this. There's a Moffat. Capaldi costume reveal imminent. We are eagerly awaiting the first image of Peter Capaldi in his costume as the Doctor. But with recent filming taking place away from the public, there's been little to go on. But this is why they need to reveal it officially, because obviously somebody's going to have a camera and take a picture on location somewhere of the costume. So the BBC need to get their finger out and reveal it.
I think the thing is, it's still obviously, you know, what we now, late January... almost February. And so we're still looking at least 6-7 months until it's actually on telly, aren't we? So
we are indeed.
You know, they could have left it a little bit, I think.
You reckon? Even if somebody...
Well, that's the problem these days, isn't it? The fact that, you know, people find out where it's filming and go down and just say take photos and they appear online like that. So better do it all officially, which is kind of like the same as the way that Alex Ferguson left Man United, wasn't it? And the fact that someone found out was about to release it and they went, hold on. We'll do it officially.
Yeah.
And it's the same with this, but, yeah.
So
I think it is a shame that people do like giving the spoilers and going out and watching it be filmed. I mean, at the end of the day, look, I've done a bit of telly in my time. I know what it's like working in telly. And it's never such a slow process. And I just don't see why anyone would want to spend hours of their day stood in a muddy field or the side of a street watching 8 seconds of television being filmed. I mean, surely that would also ruin the actual overall effect, ultimately, for you, if you're kind of like standing on some street in Cardiff or something, watching the Doctor fight the Daleks or Sontar or whoever. You know, and you see it on the screen in the episode, and it'll be like, oh, yeah, that's where it's all taking place. But then you kind of think, well, hold on, when I was standing there was Debenhams down there, then Smiths and... you know, 55 cameramen and, well, not that many, but, you know, producers and all that kind of stuff. I just don't see the point in that. I just think, just leave it. Just wait till it comes on telly. What's the big rush about seeing 6 seconds of something like and then being ruining spoiled. It for everybody else?
But I don't mind seeing photographs and clips from forthcoming episodes. Or not clips, basically just still images. Because they're not going to really give the game away that much, you know. I mean, I do like it, and I understand Moffat when he says that he lies to protect, you know, surprises. So things, surprises don't get ruined. Like, for instance, the McGann episode, that was ruined. That's why they bought it, bring it out early. But even the people who didn't pick it up, that was a big surprise and a big bonus. Things like that. Things like Tom Baker being in the 50th anniversary special. That makes them, when you're watching it first time, extra special.
It does. But I don't see why he thinks he has to lie. Don't say anything. Did your mother never tell you that, Adam, when you were younger? If you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything.
Yeah, but trouble is... But
if he's got nothing to say, if he's got nothing that he wants to tell us...
Don't
go out and do an interview saying, oh, well, the Daleks are all dead and so's every doctor. Oh, not really, I was lying.
You look like... I mean, that's the thing. That's one of the reasons I don't like Moffat, because you can't trust the... Well, you clearly can't trust the word he says, and he says he lies, but... Yeah. So don't say anything then.
Yeah.
If you've got no story to come out and give, if you've got no information about anything, just shut up. Don't give a press conference. If someone asks you something, if someone from the media asks you something, say, can't tell you that, it'll ruin it. Ah, right, okay. Better than saying some, you know, web of lies, which then everyone gets involved in, and it just makes no sense to me at all. Just don't say anything if you've got nothing you want to tell us. That's my thought anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a very good point. That is, you know, what you just said. He doesn't have to say anything. He might, because the trouble is, nobody's going to trust him either way, are they? So, because he just lies full stop. So,
yeah.
What's the point of reporting anything he says? Because it's not necessarily going to be right.
You don't know if he's telling the truth or a lie, so what's the point in listening to him?
You would never have him as a sort of a witness in a trial, would you? Because he'd easily be knocked down by the counsel for the defence or whatever. There's so much evidence of his lying.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so what's the point? Just don't bother.
I'd
rather have it like that. I'd rather have no news than lies, yes. Quite frankly. But, I mean, even though he comes out and he does, you know, admittedly he does say, I was lying about that, yeah. Leading you off the track. And I understand why he does it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting there going, Bill, why he lies to us? I know why he lies to us. He wants to keep Doctor Who in the news. But what's the point if you're just going to tell us a lie?
Exactly.
Just leave it. Anyway, what I was about to say, I found a really interesting picture here of Matt Smith in Colin Baker's costume.
Really?
Really weird. Ooh, yeah.
I want to see this. Where is this? Or post it on the 20 Megabyte Facebook group.
I will post it straight away, yeah.
Because while you're doing that, I will say that Character are releasing a new set of figures for Doctor Who, one of which is the new Doctor, because we don't know what number it is really, because it's a bit confusing, dressed in the 11th Doctor's costume.
See, that's quite pointless too.
Is it?
Isn't it?
Is it?
Well, why, if it's not going to be his costume...
Yeah.
Why are they releasing a figure that people are going to, you know?
Yeah, but they've done that with Matt Smith. I've got Matt Smith wearing David Tennant's costume. I've got I've got Tom Baker wearing a John Pertwee costume. I've got the regeneration costumes. I've got Peter Davison wearing Tom Baker's costume, and I've got Colin Baker wearing Peter Davison's costume. They tend to do this.
I think that's crazy.
So you've got the regeneration figures. I mean, I've still got my Tom Baker one in its box because I've got that time capsule thing, you know, the 5,000 limited edition. So there's only 5,000 of these figures, so it's quite good. But anyway, the only disappointing thing about these figures is they're not 5-inch, because obviously I've got the whole set of these Doctor Who figures, and they're all the 5-inch figures, so they're all like in scale, but then you've got the TARDIS and all the other companions. I've got them up on the shelf, but they've now decided to do like 3.75-inch figures. So... What? I want my 5-inch figures to go with my set.
Yeah, hold on a minute. All together or not at all?
Because I haven't released all the other Doctors in the 3.75-inch format. They have, for those little mini micro figures, they've got the all 12 or whatever. They haven't done the War Doctor yet, and they haven't done, obviously, the new Doctor. But they've nevertheless done those. I want my 5-inch... figure of the new Doctor, so as I can put them up on the shelf. They haven't actually got a Clara in that format as well, either. Is that the right word? Either? Either. Whatever.
Either.
So they're falling behind. I know that Character they're sort of trying to move away from these 5-inch figures, but they're not thinking about the people who have already got sets of stuff. And also, and that's a slight fib, because they are still bringing out, I've got coming through the post, and this is very ironic, I just said that it doesn't exist because I've got it on pre-order from some website, the War Doctor, John Hurt's War Doctor 5-inch figure to go with the set, but no Capaldi.
Do you mean Doctor number 9?
Yes, I
thank
do
you. Just make sure.
So yes, I'm ranting because I want my figures, basically. So
yeah, no, that's daft, isn't it? I mean, that's like doing a sticker book and doing half of them in colour and then going, actually, we're just doing it in black and white from now on. What? That's ridiculous. That's really stupid. Mm. I suppose it's probably done to keep costs down or something so they can try and sell them at the same kind of price.
But you can guarantee if Character made that 5-inch figure of the new Doctor, they would sell, well, millions.
Of course they would.
Because people have got these sets and they want them to be up to date.
What's the pricing then? What was the old 5-inch figures costing? What's the new 3.5?
$9.99 between $9.99 and $14.99. The new ones are, I think they're about £6.
Well, that's just daft then.
Why?
You could understand if they were doing it to save a little bit of money or something, or to try and, you know, be more economic and make a smaller figure and sell it for a little bit less. But to sell it for roughly the same price, you know, comparatively to inches to pounds, it's just ridiculous. They might as well carry on knocking them out at 5 inches.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd be delighted if they got around to doing that, especially as, you know, mind you, I will say my John Hurt figure, I think it was about £20. I bought that from Forbidden Planet because they usually get the exclusives, unfortunately. But I'm still waiting for that to come in. Hasn't arrived yet. I'm pretty sure it's supposed to arrive in January, but I'll have to check.
Something that has arrived is Matt Smith in number 6 costume.
Yeah, I can see that.
Megabyte. That's not really weird, isn't it?
Oh, it is his costume. It is weird. Mind you, the trousers aren't quite right, are they?
They're no, they're not. It's his jacket, really, and the waistcoat's the same, but the trousers are different, and I don't think they're the shoes, are they?
All I can say about that is so glad they didn't choose that as his costume.
He would have looked weird. Oh, the other thing that's just appeared on there, you know when you're on Facebook and someone writes a comment that you're involved in? As I was posting that picture, Alan T. Butcher just posted on one of the comments, one of the threads that's going on there, yeah, being ignorant is Ben's USP.
Hey! Do you think you might have upset someone?
Thank you very much, Alan T. Butcher. What's it about? What's the actual thread about? Where am I being slagged off? The next episode to record is next week.
No, I posted you, I linked you to a thread that had some article somewhere slagging off Stephen Moffat's era. So I linked you to it because I think what they were saying was even stronger than you sometimes say. But you actually sort of underlined your comments by saying that Doctor Who is still the best programme on television, even when Moffat's not on form.
Yeah, well, so I think sometimes you need to...
Because they're saying that he's ruined Doctor Who, but the argument you could say that if it's ruined, it wouldn't still be winning awards. But I think it's down to the personal opinion. If your Doctor Who has been ruined for you as the person, then that for you it's ruined, isn't it? For other people,
RTD was doing it. My views are my views,
and they're necessarily right.
And your views are your views, and Kirby's views are Kirby's views, and Reese Parton's views are wrong.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sorry, Reese's views. Sorry,
I'm not going to do the podcast anymore. I'm just going to do about 50 million other podcasts. Yeah, but I will be back when New Who starts up again. Thanks, Reese.
Yeah, of course. But no, this is all. Hold on. This says Matthew Kestrel says just because Ben Shoveler doesn't see the point of them, I think they're talking about the audiobooks, aren't they?
Yes.
It doesn't mean the rest of us don't have to be ignorant as well, Kirby. And Kirby says, "Did you not see the smiley face?" Blah blah blah. Yeah, and then Alan goes, "Say that I'm."
Basically, he's calling me ignorant to a certain degree, even though I do occasionally listen to them. I don't, listen to them non-stop.
If you want to listen to them, good luck to you.
I enjoy them. Some of them are brilliant, but then I suppose it's typical Doctor Who. Some are great, some are not. But I just, I like to, when I get time on my own, because this is the time to listen to things like audio books, audio plays, whatever, is when you're in the car and you've got a long journey or whatever, or you just,
have a long journey on the Isle of Wight? It's only about 3.5 miles long.
Well, we can go half an hour, so that's about an episode of Doctor Who.
Was that driving around the island 6 times?
No, it's driving to Shanklin or to any corner, really. Freshwater, Bembridge. Well, it takes 45 minutes to get to Bembridge, but because you've got to go around the river.
France.
You've got unless, to France unless you go over the floating bridge. If you go over the floating bridge, that cuts it down a bit. What was I on about before you interrupted me?
We're talking about you listening to them. That's the time to listen to them.
When you're on long journeys. When Alicia used to do stage school, I used to drive out to Shanklin and park up for a couple of hours. Yeah. Good time to either record a podcast or listen to audio plays. But what I tend to do is listen to podcasts, so that doesn't leave me any time for listening to audio plays. But I will say, when we drove up to see Take That in Sunderland many years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago,
That was only 2 years ago. Surely that would have been the Progress Tour, wouldn't it?
Most recent one.
Yeah, that was Progress Tour. So that would have been
4 years ago.
Been 3 years ago this summer.
Was it really? Seems longer. But anyway,
two or three.
When we drove up there, I bought the Michael McIntyre autobiography thing, which is a fantastic book, and we listened to that on the way up and on the way back, so that would have been an opportunity to listen to some Doctor Who audio, but my wife would not like to listen to Doctor Who audio in the car, so
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I'm just saying that that's the time. I've got loads of Big Finish stuff to listen to when the time comes, when I've got the opportunity to, but it don't seem to happen because I'm either podcasting, editing podcasting or podcasts, or listening to other podcasts. So they might say, oh, well, you should not listen to other podcasts and listen to Big Finish stuff, but I just don't
have the time. Well, no, you do what you want when you want, really. At the end of the day, as I was saying, you know, those audio stories, if you want to listen to them, fantastic. Mm. I don't want to listen to them. I'm not going to tell you not to listen to them. I'll say I'm not interested in them.
But I will say to you, they are, some of them, very good. I mean, if you did want to dip into them, there's a few titles that we could recommend for you to dip into. One of which
I'm sure that there are many programs on the television that I don't watch that are very good, according to some people.
Apparently,
but they're not for me.
Yes, people keep telling me that Sherlock's good, but
Sherlock's fantastic, but it's not for everybody. I mean, one of my friends won't watch Sherlock, but then again, there's reasons for that. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to watch them, if you want to listen to them, you do what you want. My view is, I haven't got time for them. I can't be bothered with them. I don't think they're canon. If you want to, argue that, then fine, argue it. You're never going to.
There
get
will be an
drink.
Argument now because
I'm ignorant.
Because of Night of the Doctor, when he mentioned all his companions that were his Big Finish companions. That will be where the argument is as to the Eighth Doctor's Big Finish stories being canon or not. I think Moffat
on board. However,
I think Moffat alluded to the fact that they're canon.
Taking them on board, what happened in the Night of the Doctor? That is a one-off 5-minute episode, if you want, and that's the only time that these people have ever been mentioned.
That's the disappointment because they
it's
could
kind
have.
Of like to me, it was put in there to try and appease the fans more than.
But they,
you know,
really they could have attached that Night of the Doctor to the Day of the Doctor, really, because I wish they had in a way, because it was so good and it was so in with the story. And of course, then they could have added another Doctor to the production in a way. And the other thing they could have done is where at the end, obviously, the Doctors are standing looking out into space in that sort of V-shaped formation.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to sort of create this CGI'd version of the Eighth Doctor. They could have actually had Paul McGann there, you know, just to do that little standing. Oh, what we'll do, Paul, watch, we've done that, we'll get you standing up and then we can superimpose you as you look now.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They decided to go back to put him as he's just regenerated version of the Doctor. But never mind. These little nitpicks.
But you know, if it wasn't for things like that, then we'd have nothing to talk about, would we?
Indeed. Yeah, I don't know what we're going to talk about during this this part of the show, so it's very awkward.
We've done quite well for half an hour.
Yes. Yeah, I'm still trying.
Hold on a minute. Hold on.
While you do that, I'm just hoping that this costume comes to view before I have to stop recording.
Well, we're going to have to take a brief 5-minute interlude, or 2-minute interlude.
Well, that gives me an opportunity to talk about my books. Yes, if you want to buy some good books, a book I forgot to mention during the quiz was the Ultimate Doctor Who Quiz Book, which is the book. This is a bit of a spin-off to the quiz show. You won't get this one by me. It's called The Ultimate Doctor Who Quiz Book, and it's available as an ebook from Amazon and iTunes. Very cheap as well. I highly recommend it. Therefore, if you look for me on iTunes or Amazon, you may find some of my other books, such as the Rolling Stones Quiz Book, the Beatles Quiz Book, the novels From Troy to Man and its prequel, The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin, and various other football-related quiz books like the Southampton Quiz Book, the Leicester City Quiz Book, the Cricket Quiz Book, the Rugby Quiz Book, the World Cup Quiz Book, et al. So if you like quiz books, look on Amazon and on iTunes for my books. You can search me, Adam Pearson. Actually, you can Google me and you'll find a few publications that I have done. Not as good as the advert that I did, that I recorded, you know, with the help of not doing it live, but still. Ben will be back soon. Oh dear, right. I'm just having a look down the results for hashtag Doctor Who. And I'm not finding much again. I bet you as soon as we stop recording, that's when the new costume will be revealed. Wouldn't be funny if it is the Sixth Doctor's coat. Somebody's tweeted, decided to start rewatching Doctor Who from the Ninth Doctor as I'm bored and still haven't seen. Then it stops. Yeah, this is probably a bit of a Reese Parton there. Only really interested in the new era of Doctor Who. For me, Doctor Who is the whole thing. And I'm really looking forward to, hopefully, in about 6 months' time, when Isabella becomes eight, that me and Isabella have a spin-off podcast called Behind the Sofa. Fingers crossed, I can actually get her involved in that. She did watch a bit.
Just like the old days, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it would be. Although Alicia had already watched most of Doctor Who before we started podcasting. She, I think we started podcasting when she was in the middle of the Tom Baker era, and then we stopped.
Well, it's interesting what you just said about the person, I missed their name, who was just said they started watching Doctor Who from the ninth Doctor again, who actually is the tenth Doctor.
Because, yes.
Ninth Doctor adventure. Mm. Yeah, they're the Doctor. Anyway,
yes.
What was I going to say? Yeah, that's, I have mentioned before that if you're in the UK, then you can watch all of them on Watch, I think.
Yes.
Channel 124. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
On Virgin Media.
And they're all available on iTunes. And sometimes iTunes, you have to always keep an eye out, but sometimes they do really good offers where you can have the old series for like £9.99. And I got the whole of Series 2. For that cheaper price, just so as I can play them through my Apple TV, etc. Oh,
well,
iPad,
the DT
iPhone.
Series 2.
Right. Yeah. So you have to just keep a lookout because they don't tell you they're going to put these things on offer. You just keep looking for them, and then you get, you know, to have a whole series of Doctor Who for £9.99. I know you can sometimes get the DVDs on offer if you're lucky to stumble into HMV when they're doing a sale, but that's pretty good. You can just bung them on your iPhone or whatever and play them in the car. Or, on your iPad.
They're just
iPod.
Starting on Watch now. Mm. They've just started with Matt Smith's first series, so Series 5. Back end of last week, however, they were obviously there for at the end of DT's Series 4, inside the Stolen Earth, and that, just fantastic episodes, those two.
I'm just looking, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm just looking at the BBC Doctor Who Facebook page. I wonder if you're allowed to post links to podcasts on it. Because all I can see is posts from Doctor Who itself. I can see comments on certain things.
Well, something might not let you be able to post it, though.
I'm thinking if I did that, the BBC might listen to the podcast and say, copyright,
What, copyright what? What's copywritten? What do you use as copywritten?
The theme tune.
Your music's was made for
you.
Oh,
mind you, the music, no, it wasn't. No, that was from An Unearthly Child, but it is older than 50 years, so technically it might be sort of out of copyright, he said, hopefully.
copyright should last, well, it depends if it's either 35 or 50 years, so whatever, it should be out of copyright now anyway.
Anyway, we're only promoting...
But then again, you can extend it. If
we're only promoting the show for free. Well, I mean, Doctor Who is long-going copyright in it, because every time they bring out a new episode, that reinitiates the copyright of Doctor Who, doesn't it?
Yeah, but the words Doctor Who aren't copywritten.
Well, Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC.
Doctor, yeah, but only in the context of the character, not the words. Mm-hmm. You can't trademark words, not common words. You're not allowed to.
Apparently, TARDIS is a trademark of the BBC too.
Not a common word, is it?
Oh, I see.
You know, it's not like the word guitar. Mm-hmm. You can't walk into the trademarker's shop and say, I'd like to trademark the word guitar. Everyone
Dalek
word
is a
guitar.
Trademark of Terry Nation Estate.
But again, Dalek, it was something that he created that isn't a common word in everyday use, is it?
Hmm.
It's not, I say, I'll use the word guitar again as an example. Although the Daleks are a being which have been created by a person which have been copyrighted because he invented them. Doctor Who is a person. You can't copyright the word Doctor Who. You can copyright the font it's written in, but you and the character of Doctor Who or the Doctor.
Oh dear, the font it's written in. And I've just done a new logo. But it's not actually the font. It's somebody who's made up a font to look like it.
Oh, no, exactly. So that's fine. You know, it's like having sound-alike versions of songs, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
I probably should shut up about this because I'm going on way too much about radio things that I know, but yeah, basically, you know, that the font it's written, if you write, you know, the Doctor Who font at the beginning of the beginning of any TV series, if you if you photograph that and reproduce that and try to make money off it, yeah, the BBC would nab you for infringement of copyright. But you're allowed to say the words Doctor Who, you're allowed to write the words Doctor Who.
That's good.
As long as it doesn't infringe on...
Yeah, but this
is
why we have the disclaimer at the end of the episode, Isabella's copyright infringement intended. It's supposed to be a disclaimer. Don't know if it works or not.
No, it doesn't.
And the BBC have not jumped on any podcasts yet. And we do give them free promotion.
But they won't, because it's promotion. Like you say, you're not getting paid for this. I'm not getting paid for this. I should be. But, you know, you're not making any money off it. All the money you get goes back into the podcast.
Yes. So basically, you're talking about our sponsor, our illustrious sponsors who actually pay for it.
Just because you get sponsored, that doesn't mean that you then get a paycheck every week off them for doing it. You know, so therefore, the BBC wouldn't be interested in you.
I did try and sell a mug. I did try and sell a mug to try and fund the podcast. But again, like you say, it doesn't go. The money didn't go.
That's it, Adam. I'm afraid. You know, that's probably you locked up for at least
the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast mug and T-shirts. No profit made because people just paid for them and it went basically straight back to Vistaprint, who made them. I'll tell you what.
Exactly. So, you know, the point is basically at the end of the day, they BBC or any company won't bother suing you unless you are doing something that's negative towards their product. And as people would like to say, this isn't negative.
Ben, what about Stephen Moffat?
Negative. Well, he's always negative.
Anyway, I was just thinking, just something dawned on me that it might be good to go back and do a bit of a nostalgia with the podcast. Because remember all the days gone by, we used to do a thing called eBay. We used to look at the most expensive Doctor Who stuff on eBay. We haven't done it for a while because it always tended to be the same thing.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. It was always the same thing. It just the never chess got set. Bid on. And that one got that chess set that was going for about £19,000 or whatever it was.
But now we have something different as the most expensive thing listed on eBay.
Hold on. Let me catch up with you. I'm just sorting from best match into highest price first.
Yes.
Postage and packing.
You should have the same thing as me. I've just got highest price first. So you should have at the top of your list original screen used Doctor Who Cyberman suit prop as seen on This Morning. Yes.
Which is $3,000 start price, $5,000
buy it now. Oh my God.
I'm all right, actually, for that at the moment. I've got a full size cardboard cutout Dalek, which I don't have any room for, so a full size Cyberman costume.
The funny thing is, we just changed our mortgage and are going to get a check for the sort of a little bit of money to sort of pay off a few things. And so that check is going to be around the £10,000 mark. Of course, it's going to get absorbed by Deb's credit card. But if I get the check before she does...
Or Deb is going to buy a new pair of scissors.
Yeah, but if I get it before she does, I could technically buy that. You can imagine her face. She comes home...
Then I can imagine yours afterwards. It's been pummeled in with a frying pan. So I'm thinking that's not a great idea.
All right, then.
The second on the list is Doctor Who Alien Attack.
Hang on. We don't bother with stuff that's not got bids against it. Because...
Nothing's got bids against it.
Yes, it has, because if you look further down the list, for £800...
Yeah, but the Cyberman thing hadn't. That was
No, we do that because that's the most expensively listed. But the thing that's actually people are interested in, most expensive-wise, is framed oil painting by Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor Who. £800 plus £6.75 postage. How can you confirm that is actually by Patrick Troughton?
Well, it's probably got his signature
on
the bottom.
It's got PT on it, but how can he be absolutely 100% sure that he's done it?
Quite right. Yeah, it could be Petulia Turner.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't shell out £800 for something on eBay for the fear that it might not be genuine.
No, not at all. I think that's crazy, crazy talk. Almost as crazy as the person who's trying to sell a full-size TARDIS that look, the dimensions look wrong. Seriously, when you're talking about the TARDIS, you've got to get the dimensions
Doctor Who, you've got to get the dimensions right. But the second highest item with bids against is currently going for £400. It's had 19 bids against it, and that is Doctor Who.
Hold on, before you get to there, though.
What?
Before you get, I know this one's got no bids against it, but some people might be interested. The very rare original Katie Manning Girl Illustrated magazine from 1977. £695.
What?
I mean, not that I'd know, but if you want to find those nudie pictures of Katie Manning, then you might find them on the internet.
Yes.
Not that I've looked for them.
No, I'm sure they are. I'm just a bit disappointed that Karen Gillan or Jenna Coleman didn't decide to emanate.
God, Jenna Coleman did. Let's just say I probably wouldn't be around for the podcast for a couple of weeks.
Well, someone has got this, the picture of all the doctors side by side, which we use as our logo that I've slightly amended to include Capaldi. They've got the original one that the BBC posted before the War Doctor became part of the team. And that's listed at £449.99. It says, Matt Smith as the Doctor, signed by Doctor Who History, framed montage photo, Aftal Koa. I don't know what that means. Well, I've got a signed 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast A4 piece of card with Louise Jameson and friend of the show Daphne Ashbrook, Colin Baker, all signing it. But I don't think that's going to be worth £449.99. I think they've overpriced somewhat.
If you stuck a Doctor Who photo on it, you'd probably get 50 quid for it on eBay.
Well, anyway, right, yeah, so Doctor Who, this is the second most...
Hold on, I found something here.
You have?
Doctor Who Millennium
That's
FX.
What I was just about to say.
Sonic screwdriver prop replica.
400 quid.
£400 with 19 bids against it.
It is nice, though. Is it made of metal? Because if it's a metal one, you can imagine why people want it. Ooh, it's nice, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's just, plasticky one.
Yeah, a bit naff, aren't they?
It's plasticky.
Yeah. Tell you what.
But what was it? Nice. Was it, I can't remember where I heard it. You may have seen this, I heard it before, but didn't David Tennant, when he went back to record the 50th special, have to firstly take back one of his own costumes that he was given when he left?
Possibly.
So that costume that he wears in it is actually his own, you know, when he gave it to. And the Sonic screwdriver...
Yes, that's his too.
I can't remember the exact story, but I thought that the ones that they had at the BBC had all broken.
Yeah.
And he had been given one, but he said no, he wasn't going to take it back because it was too...
precious?
Yeah, and so I think they made a copy of his copy. It was something like that. I might have got the end bit wrong, but the costume was definitely his.
I'm not surprised. I mean, Colin Baker kept his costume, and as you see the picture I posted of that I took of Colin Baker with Bessie on the Isle of Wight in 1994, that was his coat that he took and kept himself. There were a few others made, obviously, because those appear in various Doctor Who exhibitions, that the replicas that... So he had a few to change into for one reason or other. But, yeah, they can keep certain items.
Well, every actor who plays a part like that for, you know, a significant amount of time will end up with bits from the series, won't they? You can, you know, pretty much guarantee that Benedict Cumberbatch, by the time that they finish Sherlock, will walk away with one of Sherlock's coats. Because he's got plenty of them.
Yes. I'm still trying to look down the list of the third most expensive item.
Yeah, I can't find anything.
There's nothing now.
there's not a lot of people. There's a lot of stuff on here.
Yeah, there is. But nothing that anybody wants.
Well, no, because people just put it way too expensive.
Yeah. For example, Titan merchandise Doctor Who, David Tennant as the 10th Doctor, Maxi Bust. £169.42. We're having a laugh.
Yeah. Doctor Who prop for Dalek with full life-size 1-to-1 scale gun with blue light. 300 quid.
Inflatable Dalek in red. Buy one, get one at 5% off. What a offer that is at £159.99.
I'll have two. Another Child's Police Box Wardrobe Toy Cupboard.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
TARDIS, 265 quid.
Rubbish. Goodness me, there's a... Sexy Karen Gillan signed 11x14 Doctor Who Amy Pond Guardians of the Galaxy thing, with her sort of lounging on a sort of settee thing in a very sexy outfit. Sorry, I'm going to have to click on this because we'll never close a look. Whoa, good Lord. I love the way eBay, you can do this sort of zoom in effect, and that is really quite nice. Yeah, but that, surprise, surprise, hasn't got any bids on it, even though it's listed for $250 or £151.49.
Oh, you're way below where I am going. I'm still on the £242 mark.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I found something. I found something. Here we go. I don't know what it's got to do with Doctor Who, but it says BBC Radio Times, BBC Bound Volume 170 to 171, 8th of January to 8th of July, 1966, includes Doctor Who, £150. Now, I would actually like to have a look in there because I've always wanted to know what was on telly on the day I was born. But that issue of Radio Times would be in that bundle, but I'm not shelling out 150 quid for it. But I might contact the person who buys it to find out if they can read it or photocopy it for me.
Yes, there you go. Dear person who's just spent £150 on a load of tat.
Yeah,
I'm really quite interested in knowing one particular thing from all of... What? To what? Blood, Blimey.
Add to watch list. There we go. So I'm going to, I've watched that one. So later on, I'll eventually, oh, I've got to sign in to do that. Isn't that terrible? And that concludes eBay for.
Oh, hold on a minute. I've got one here, which I've just got to mention. Yeah. A Karen Millen oversized check skirt, UK, size 10, Clara Oswald, Doctor Who, £200 for a skirt.
Yes, and she is a nice piece of skirt too.
I'd pay £200 for Jenna Coleman, but not for a skirt. Jeebus. Oh, that's a nice watch. I like that watch, the official Doctor Who watch. I want that.
Do you? What's it look like?
But again, £200 for a watch that I will no doubt scratch and
I scratched my actual watch I got for my 40th birthday within days, and it's never been scratched again since, but it's still got the original scratches on it, which is a bit of a shame, isn't it?
Hold on a minute. What? Just talking about people who put things on eBay for way too much money.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the... Oh, the wife's home. Did you see the Doctor Who trilogy sketch card that's on there? You've got one of Tom Baker, one of... I can't work out. What the hell, that's number 8. Anyway, they're at £200 each for a bit of drawing.
Yeah, people...
A bit of what?
People try it on, it's got to be said.
God, Lord. No, anyway, we can move
that's
on.
That's it. Yes, that's what will come as we draw to a close. I will just mention that after us talking about audio productions and stuff, Big Finish have won a drama award.
Right.
So congratulations to them. And enemy of the show, Nick Briggs, is seen in the photograph picking up an award. I call him enemy of the show because I upset him.
What? How did you upset him?
Because he was one of the first celebrities I interviewed on the 20 Megabyte podcast, and I put it to him that all Doctor Who is now fan fiction, and he took that as an insult, and he didn't quite understand what I was getting at when I said the people who write Doctor Who now are fans of the show, they've grown up as fans of the show and become writers because they're fans of the show, and now they are now professional fan fiction. And he took that as an insult, and has never never answered my requests to come back on the show since. So I'd love to meet him, actually, to put him in a corner.
I don't see how that's insulting. What you've done is made a very good point.
Well, I didn't.
You know, it's like saying at the weekend that the first player who played for Arsenal since Arsene Wenger was manager, was born since Arsene Wenger was manager, played for them. What's the difference in that to saying that people who now used to watch Doctor Who now write Doctor Who? It's fan fiction.
A lot of them actually appear in it as well. Peter Capaldi, fan of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
David Tennant.
Shut up, whoever
it was. It's Nicholas Briggs, it was. Yes. The voice of the Daleks. So I'd like to meet him, put him in a corner and sort of give him no choice but to speak to me. And I did have spoken since to one of his colleagues, that's Paul Wilson, who I still haven't got round to finishing editing that special yet. He confirmed that Nicholas wouldn't have liked the way or what I said to him.
But that's daft.
It is daft, yeah. I agree. Anyway, but well, thank you, Ben. Apparently we're recording on Monday next week, so hopefully we'll be able to join whoever does turn up on the show, because I never know who's going to be on each week, apart from the fact it's fairly unlikely that Reese is going to be on. So until then, thank you for coming on.
Well, yeah, so next Monday, okay, well that's 39 Eve next week.
Just in case you're interested, we will be looking
at hold on.
The Invasion.
You've just talked straight over the important thing.
Did I?
Yes, it's 39 Eve next week. Next Monday.
What's 39 Eve?
How old am I at the moment?
I thought you were already 21, 22, something like that.
Something like that. yes. So we're recording on my birthday Eve, so I expect lots of nice wishes and presents and cakes.
Well done. I've already tried that and it never works. But no, worth a try. Mind it is you, then they'll make an exception for you.
I'd hope so.
Anyway, thank you very much. See you next week.
Goodbye. Thank you very much, Mr. Adam. Bye bye, Podgrammers.
Well, we have a bit of a stop press here on the 20 Megabyte podcast, don't we, Isabella?
Yes.
You don't quite know why, though, do you?
No.
Do you know what a stop press is?
No.
It means last minute news. The 12th Doctor's costume has been revealed.
Yes. No.
You've seen it, have you?
Yes.
What does it look like, then?
Well, I don't know.
Do you know who the 12th Doctor is?
Peter Capaldi.
Oh, I've got that bit right then. Well, they've only just released it, so you can't possibly have seen it. So what does it look like?
Well, it has really shiny shoes.
So you can only see his shoes?
Yeah.
So can you describe to the listeners what his costume looks like?
This costume has like a black blazer, like what a magician wears.
Yeah. Anything else?
Some nice little black trousers.
And what else?
There's like a t-shirt underneath, like the jacket.
I think it's actually a shirt rather than a t-shirt. What about the lining of the blazer you were talking of?
Well, that colour is red.
So do you think it suits him?
Yeah, I really do.
Do you think he looks doctorish?
Yeah.
Good, innit?
Yeah.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.